Modern Love, the podcast, is made possible with support from Living Proof.
In celebration of the Trinity Collection's 100th anniversary, this podcast is supported by Cartier.
Living Proof's dry shampoo is so good at actually cleaning hair that you can take a spin class and not wash your hair after. Use the code LOVE at livingproof.com for a free travel-size dry shampoo with your $20 order. We are the science. You are the Living Proof. And by Squarespace, providing tools that help people showcase their passions with a customized landing page, website, or online store. Also offering domains, hosting, and 24/7 support. Get your free trial at squarespace.com/modernlove. You should. Squarespace.
From the New York Times and WBUR Boston, this is Modern Love. Stories of love, loss, and redemption. I'm your host, Meghna Chakrabarty. For some couples, making a baby the old-fashioned way just isn't in the cards. But there are other options. Surrogacy, sperm banks, egg donors. And those options can make things even more complicated. As you'll hear when actor Jesse Tyler Ferguson, yes, of Modern Family, reads Jerry Mahoney's Modern Love essay, Mom, Not Mom, Aunt.
After 5 loving, fulfilling years with my boyfriend, Drew, I suddenly found myself online, looking to meet a woman. I spent hours poring over profiles, bios, and stats, looking at poorly lighted digital pictures and videos of awkward faces uttering tightly rehearsed self-promotional pitches. I narrowed the flash mob of candidates to 6. Then I summoned Drew for his approval. Together, we had a decision to make. One of the strangers on this website could end up contributing half of our child's DNA. Big nose, bad hair, gross skin, oh, those eyebrows. Drew sped down the list and blackballed them all. I fought for a few, but she has a 4.0 at veterinary school, and this one teaches autistic kids to tap dance. Drew was unmoved. I shouldn't have been surprised. As a writer, I'm drawn to characters with intriguing quirks and heart-tugging backstories. But for Drew, who spent 12 years overseeing reality programming for MTV, this was proving just to be another casting decision, albeit for the significant supporting role of egg donor. We'd been instructed by our surrogacy agency not to use the M word. This child will have 2 fathers, the staff member scolded. He or she will have an egg donor and a surrogate, but no mother. Whatever you call these young women, there's no shortage of them. For all those who are desperate to stop gay couples from adopting, there are others who are eager to help us down a more complex path to parenthood. And for the most part, they are merely girls, some as young as 19, still in their awkward phases. You click on a face, and up pops a video in which an acne-cheeked college sophomore talks about her poli-sci major, her love of soccer and One Tree Hill, and eyes wide with optimism about the corporation she'll be running in 5 years. Drew and I found each other, via similar means, an online dating site. We used a kind of systemized vetting that, these days, takes the place of destiny. Drew screened out the guys who liked house music or who mixed up your and your. I vetoed anyone who, in place of a headshot, uploaded a crotch shot. Choosing a biological relative for our unborn fetus wasn't going to be as simple. There were so many more variables and bigger questions to ponder. Most candidates requested the standard $8,000 fee, but some negotiated their own rates. If she was blonde, athletic, and Harvard-educated, she thought she was worth $30,000. Everybody wants their children to have the best, but this process threatened to bankrupt us even without all the premium options. Besides, who knew what that money would really buy? If we pick someone with an astronomical price tag, couldn't we be saddling our child with the greed gene? And how would we explain it to him? Your egg donor was the top of the line, son. We got you, and she got a Porsche. Or we wanted you to be taller, but anything over 5'9" was out of our price range. For us, two men who struggle over which Netflix movie to watch, this decision could stretch on long after our biological clocks had run out. That's when Susie called. "You know you can have my eggs if you want them, right?" she said. It was that swift, that casual, as if we were talking about borrowing her hairdryer or Ani DiFranco CDs rather than part of her womanhood. But with that simple statement, it got even more complicated. Susie was everything an egg donor should be. Kind, beautiful, smart, a gifted artist, and at 28, practically at the peak of her fertility. She was also Drew's little sister. Despite being 9 years apart in age and on opposite sides of the country, Susie and Drew couldn't be closer or more alike. They talk on the phone nearly every day, make the same facial expressions, laugh at the same dirty jokes, have the same mercurial temper. With Susie's offer, I knew generosity was yet another trait they shared. All along, Drew and I had wondered whose sperm would we use. With Susie, the matter was settled. I would be the biological father. Yet, for the first time, Drew and I were also able to imagine what it would be like to have a child who had genetic roots in both family trees. What would she look like? How would he act? How would our respective features merge into one warbling little miracle? We'd grown up when coming out meant putting an end to dreams of fatherhood. Now we were giddy with the possibilities of reproduction that most straight couples take for granted. But what exactly would Susie be sacrificing? She was young and unattached. She wanted her own children but wasn't ready. So was she prepared for someone else to have her child? And how would she explain this particular brand of baggage to a potential husband someday? Most of all, would she be satisfied always being Aunt Susie to this child and never, you know, the M word? Drew and I had doubts, but Susie considered it a done deal. This was her brother, and if he needed eggs, damn it, he was going to take hers. She was as stubborn as Drew would have been if he were offering and she were the one in need. She didn't flinch when the doctor explained the pain and inconvenience she would endure before her eggs were extracted. Months of genetic tests, weeks of hormone injections, and the resultant mood swings. Most troubling of all, she'd need so much time off she could risk losing her job. To all of this, she shrugged and asked only one question. When do we start? When the day of the extraction finally came, the hard part was supposed to be over. With the right dose of medication, most women Susie's age produce dozens of healthy eggs. But for reasons the doctor couldn't explain, Susie produced only 5. Of those, 2 failed to fertilize. The outlook was bad for us, devastating for Susie. The physician spoke about her fertility the way Al Gore describes polar ice caps. Time is running out, and it may already be too late. He warned that if our surrogate couldn't become pregnant with Susie's eggs, it was unlikely Susie ever would either. We all agreed the only option was to implant the 3 embryos and begin an excruciating wait. If this didn't work, Drew and I would return to the websites full of strangers, if we even had the strength to try again. And we didn't want to think about what that would mean for Susie. 10 days later, we were visiting Drew's family in upstate New York. It was 2 days before Christmas, and we were all trying our best to talk about anything but babies. My cell phone rang, and a hush fell over the room. The nurse on the other end didn't stall. "Jerry," she squealed, "I have some exciting news." A cascade of cheers drowned out the rest of the call, and Susie, Drew, and I shared a tight hug that seemed to last for hours. A few weeks later, we joined our surrogate for her first ultrasound, where an even bigger surprise awaited. From the grainy soup on the sonogram monitor, 2 peanut shapes emerged. Drew and I were going to be the fathers of twins. Our son and daughter are now 10 months old, and when I look at them, I see traces of each of us. My nose, Susie's eyes, Drew's chin. They're just starting to invent a secret language to communicate with each other. If we hear one baby cry, it's a safe bet that the other just stole her pacifier or hit him with a stuffed monkey. But then, when no one's looking, sometimes they'll reach out and hold each other's hands. Susie gets to witness it all, because her frequent phone calls with Drew have become video chats with our whole family. And as I watch Drew proudly showing off our children for her, I realize the gift Susie has given us is much more valuable than just a genetic link to our offspring. It's a brother and a sister. Tiny. Perfect. And gradually building a special bond all their own.
Jesse Tyler Ferguson, reading Jerry Mahoney's essay, Mom, Not Mom, Aunt. So here's a little peek behind the scenes. The actors who read for us, they get to choose the modern love essay they want to work with. And here's why Jesse Tyler Ferguson says this one spoke so strongly to him.
For many reasons, it's very resonant to me, and I have many friends who have been through similar processes, and both gay and straight, who have had to look for alternate means to have kids. And it's certainly something my husband and I are thinking about as we're looking to expand our family. And I love it because it's not an issue that is a gay or straight issue. It's a human issue, and it's something that I think a lot of families can relate to. And I teared up when I read it, so I was like, this is the one I want to do.
Jesse, thank you so much for reading this week's essay. You can see Jesse Tyler Ferguson on ABC.
In celebration of the Trinity Collection's 100th anniversary, this podcast is supported by Cartier.
I'm Emily Badger. I'm a reporter with the New York Times. Since the pandemic, empty office buildings have become much more common in many cities. Why can't we just turn them into housing? It's actually a really complicated question. To answer this question, you have to find a developer trying to turn an office building into apartments, ride a rickety elevator to the 30th floor of a construction site to see the interior guts of a building, find an expert in incandescent light bulbs who can explain to you how they fundamentally change office buildings. And that's just the beginning of what you have to do. When you subscribe to the New York Times, you are sending reporters like me out into the world to ask questions of dozens of different experts, to go and visit places most people don't get to go, to try to come back with answers, and then turn all of that into something that anyone can understand. If you'd like to become a subscriber, head to nytimes.com/subscribe. You need to see the animated floor plans in this piece.
He sees Modern Family, of course, and he'll also play 40 characters in Fully Committed, a one-man show that opens on Broadway this April. Now, don't hit pause or fast forward or skip track, because you're going to want to hear what writer Jerry Mahoney has to say about his real life now as a gay dad. That's after the break. Stay with us.
I'm Katie at Living Proof, and we get love letters all the time, like this one. Dear Living Proof, my hair feels great, just like it used to feel before all the coloring. And not just pathetic wisps blowing in the wind, but a real head of hair to let fly with pride. I could woo Eric Clapton from the 10th row with this hair. Love, Sally. You can use the code LOVE for a free travel-size dry shampoo with your $20 order. Livingproof.com.
We're back. It's Modern Love, the podcast. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. And now a postscript from the author of this week's essay, Jerry Mahoney.
I really was worried that my kids would have a hard time not having a mom and having two dads. And the thing that's amazed me, and part of it is just because my kids are such amazing kids and such fascinating little people, is that they love it. They feel like our family is special. They feel like they hit the jackpot. And I know that there will be times in their life that they might wish they had a mom or, you know, feel that absence in their life. But overall, I think it's been such a positive thing for them. And I don't think they would trade our family for anything. And I know I wouldn't. Being a gay dad, we get a lot of the same reactions over and over again. And I'm happy to say most of them are very positive. Sometimes people are just confused by our family. Before our kids were born, my husband and I went to buy a minivan, and we were dealing with a car salesman, and he was trying to figure out our story, and we were trying to explain it to him, and it just wasn't coming across. He said, so is this van for you or you? And we said, well, it's for both of us. And he said, okay, well, your wives are really going to love this. And we said, well, no, we don't have wives. It's for us with each other. And he was just like, okay, great. Well, you know, your kids and your kids are both going to love this. And like, he just did not get it no matter how much we tried to explain it. But he really wanted to sell us the minivan. Being a dad has changed my life in ways I never would have imagined. I love it more than anything else I've done in my life. I knew when we had the kids that I would eventually be going back to work and we would have to hire a nanny or put them in daycare. And when the time came to do that, I just couldn't do it. I didn't want to hand them over to somebody else to raise after all that we had been through to have them. And I also didn't want to not be there for them. I really liked being around them. I liked changing diapers and doing all that stuff and, you know, eventually teaching them to talk and walk and their ABCs. And I talked to my husband about it, and we decided that I would stay home and be a stay-home dad. And that's what I've been doing for the last 6.5 years. It's been the most rewarding and wonderful thing I've ever done. And I've been thinking a lot lately about transitioning back into the job world. I've decided to pursue my education degree because I really like the idea of being around kids. And I want to teach elementary school and be around kids all the time. And I also love the idea that I would be on the same schedule as my kids. I would still see them in the afternoons and the summers, and it wouldn't be going back to the kind of job I had before where I was working crazy hours and I was never home and I was stressed out. I'm sure I'll still be stressed out as a teacher. But other than that, I think it's a good job for me to have, and I'm very excited for that.
So life is good, but I still have one nagging question. His kids know who Aunt Susie is, but do they really know who Aunt Susie is?
We are very open with our kids about Susie and about her role in our family. She is more than just an aunt. She's a very special aunt. And we use the term egg donor with our kids all the time. And to the extent that they can understand that at 6 years old, they understand it. Which is to say not completely, but they can appreciate that she did something very special and that they wouldn't be here without her help. So they have a very close bond with Aunt Susie.
And as all things go with modern love, there are twists of fate and family in this story, too. You remember how the idea of time running out and melting polar ice caps came to mind when the doctor described Susie's waning fertility? Well, after donating her eggs to Jerry and Drew, Susie unexpectedly got pregnant on her own and has a little girl now named Grace. And that's not all. There is actually more. Susie and Drew have two brothers, one of whom is also gay. He and his husband wanted to start a family, and Susie stepped in again, this time serving as their surrogate. And when people ask her why she's done all this, Susie's answer is, why not?
The whole idea of donating my eggs to them it wasn't about a maternal thing. I guess at 29, not having kids, it didn't enter my head. It just seemed like the right thing to do. They were wonderful people to be around, and I knew that them raising kids, whether they were my eggs or not, was going to be amazing. This situation in general is, I jokingly call it selfish, because I have amazing, oh, here come the waterworks. I have an amazing support group and amazing family. I have three wonderful brothers who I can't imagine not being around. And the thought that my daughter would be an only child just kills me. So the idea of her having cousins that are close enough, just in a relationship, I want her to have family.
Susie Tappan is Jerry Mahoney's sister-in-law. Jerry decided to write a book about this experience. It's called Mommy Man: How I Went from Mild-Mannered Geek to Gay Superdad. Jerry also sent us some pictures of the family. You can find it all at our website, wbur.org/modernlove. Next week on Modern Love, America Ferrera, star of ABC's Ugly Betty and the NBC comedy Superstore. She brings us the story of an African aid worker and the heartache that comes with thinking you can save the world.
I told myself this was my adventure, the kind of story I could someday tell my children to prove I once was brave and interesting.
Modern Love is a production of The New York Times and WBUR, Boston's NPR station. It's produced, directed, and edited by Jessica Alpert, John Perotti, and Amory Sievertson. The idea for the Modern Love podcast was conceived by Lisa Tobin. Iris Adler is our executive producer. Daniel Jones is editor of Modern Love for The New York Times and advisor to the show. Music for the podcast, courtesy of APM. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and don't forget to subscribe to Modern Love on iTunes. And while you're there, let us know what you think of the podcast. Leave us a review. That's it for this time. We'll see you next week.